I was looking at your yard earlier. You are on recovery.
Oh, man. I got to get the music started, don't I?
That would be great.
Yeah, well, that would mean I have to start the player.
In the meantime, we can, you know.
Say something.
It's never boring, talking with you, John.
All right.
Yeah.
So say something cool here.
Say something cool. Yeah, something cool.
You got something cool. I got to plug in the player here.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Your yard is beautiful.
Well, now we've had a spectacular week here right on here, because we know we're right bordering on the national park behind us. And so on night before last, around, about 6 p.m., my wife's out on the back porch, and she says, "Hey, come watch this." And by the time I got there, this mother deer right on the left side of the yard here had given birth to a fawn.
Yeah, I saw that post.
And then the next morning, another deer gave birth to another fawn on the other side of the fence, right out by the gate, by that gate that my buddies built. You know, the China kind of Asian gate there. And so we got pictures of it, man. It's like a birthing room for deer here.
Oh, man, you got to share that. You know, that's very interesting, because it seems like that might be your yard. It's a safe place.
Well, it must be. I mean, we call them the flower eaters.
The flower raiders.
Anyway, so the flowers are blooming. The hot pokers are out. Mm-hmm. I never heard of them before I got here. And they're cool because they start out blooming like a kind of a flowery thing, and then the bud is actually a lot of itty bitty buds that compress into something that looks like an upside down ice cream cone or something.
Oh, okay? Yeah, no, I saw that.
And it has a flat top on it that the birds can finally just land on it and sit on there and, you know, wobble
what's
around.
What's the name of it?
They call it a hot poker. That has some other Latin name, I'm sure, but
a hot poker.
Yeah, that's what it looks like too.
A yard full of hot pokers.
We got that, and we got these. I don't know all the names. It's just like it's starting to be an orchestra,
flowers,
though.
Yeah,
now you look over on the right side over here, man. I don't know. That was the last place she was gardening before she died. I don't know. She put some.
Yeah, she did a wonderful job out there. So how did you fare in the rain in this area right here, John?
Well, we're okay, because we're pretty high up here. But downtown Harper's Ferry, the park, part of the park road there is flooded.
Yeah.
And they say that the Shenandoah is reaching historic. Millville's flooded, okay? Yeah. So, of course, my son and these crazy river riders – say, "Oh man, you know, well, if the Shenandoah's at I don't know 15 feet and the Potomac's at 21, when the waves hit together, guess how high it's going to go?" I said, "I don't know." He says, "30 feet." And he says, "I got to get on a raft and ride over that a 30 foot wave."
That's a good adventure. It's beautiful down in Harper's Ferry here, too. If you just get a moment and come down and enjoy this,
I know it's really
view.
I mean, it's like living in
breathtaking. You know, I was coming here this morning and cruising on 340. Man, I had the oldies but goodies. You know, the XM station on there. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Dells. I'm gonna play it back for you because it just made me think of my
the Dells. Now they are.
Oh, what a night! Yes,
are they East Coast or West Coast?
They're East Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, all the good groups are from the East Coast.
Los Angeles would argue with you. Okay, but
they can call in. They can call in and argue. We got a phone number here, and I'm.
Remember there was a group like they were like the Shondells, and then there was there was about five or six different groups.
Yeah, they got that were, music is magic all over the world.
I think they were all kind of inspired by Sam Cooke a little bit, you know, but.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite Sam Cooke?
I don't remember the names of the songs.
Yeah,
name one.
A Change Is Gonna Come.
Well, that one, yeah. But
that's
a given, yeah. But who did the Boardwalk song?
It wasn't Sam Cooke.
No, early or the original Boardwalk song. It wasn't Sam Cooke. It was...
I don't know. One of our listeners. Yeah, but I love that song, too, because I remember Coney Island.
absolutely.
Those things. I know. Under the boardwalk. I never could afford one of those hot dogs. When we went over, my mom, you know, if she...
Well, they charge you $10 for a Coney Island dog or something?
No. I think it was probably a dollar or something. But, I mean, you know, you don't realize it until you use hindsight what poverty really is. And, you know,
no, like, you don't.
Economic starvation. And we would... my mother would get the hot dog and cut it, but I was always on punishment. So,
so you didn't get one?
I didn't get the hot dog. You know,
oh,
so
man.
It wasn't until I ventured out to Coney Island as a teenager on my own with a dollar that I had. We used to pick parking meters. I don't know if you.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Now we're going to date ourselves and pick parking meters and get the change out of the public telephone.
But see, I wasn't raised poor, so yeah. I learned from kids that did that. But my idea of a good time was to go around and put firecrackers in the automatic intercom things that kids,
you got to tell us that story one day. The firecracker in the intercom.
Well, you know, you go, hey, bing dong, and then you'd set an M80 or whatever in the thing,
and they would hear it.
They would blow. Well, it would blow it completely up.
Oh,
you know,
you
I
would,
mean, we were bad.
Today, you would be called a terrorist.
Hey, I got a question about terrorism
yes,
for you.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So, terrorism or. I mean, if you try to define it, people are always running down to it's a list of tactics. Okay. You know, like killing people that are unarmed or something like that. So my question is that what is because it's not a political thing really. It's really you're really referring to I just set a roadside bomb up and I'm going to create enough death and destruction. So I just disorder everything you're doing. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But what's counterterrorism?
I have no idea, John. Please enlighten me.
Well, I'm wondering whether it's just an excuse to be terrorists against terrorists.
Counterterrorism.
Well, we send drones over and, just assassinate them without trial, of course, you know. Uh-huh. And, from little guys flying above you.
So counterterrorism.
So counterterrorism is using. Is it going to use the same tactics as the? Yeah, I mean, really. I
as
mean,
the terrorists.
Right. Yeah. Just.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Where are we at? The nation
the
states are too powerful to wage war against. So everybody wages war by terrorizing somebody. You know, one way or the other.
Yeah, and they use a lot of terroristic words and phrases and things in the leadership in the arena today. You know,
right, that's why
your lawyer is telling you that you can shoot somebody and get away with it. I mean, I had to cover my grandson's ears from the news. People start feeling like, well, if he can do it as the president, it must be okay.
It's really, when you think about him.
You think it's just a lot of talk?
Oh, no. I think he's really dangerous.
Oh,
I don't
think
it's just talk.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you look at what this guy's doing administratively through his different cabinet people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
He's taken apart all of the environmental legislation. He's taken apart civil rights. He's taken apart labor rights. Okay. He's taken apart any restrictions on, fake regulations that about the prevented. Caused the crash.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the lack of which caused the crash in 2008. Okay,
yeah.
And you know, like people putting all the risking your money with no leverage whatsoever. Okay, and if they lose, you lose. They don't. You know, that kind of thing. They won't put no. They can put all your money on bets in the securities markets, but they don't have to put any of their own in.
Right.
Yeah, that's called,
terrorism.
That's right. Well, I have some skin in the game. It's yours.
Yeah. I'm going to bet your skin.
Yeah.
Hold on.
You know, right. And matter of fact, if there's a war, it's going to be your kids that go over there, okay, that protect my property.
Yeah. Yeah. You are marketable. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. I could segue with that one, John.
We
talk and I say, but no. But I want you, because every time we talk and when I listen to you, I relate it to opioid addiction and the struggles that people are having in this country. I think it's economic starvation is what I call it, social starvation. People are starving and they're being blown up. They're being blown up by the false narratives and all the things that cause people to do what it is that they do when they become addicted to something. So we're going to do Recovery Radio this morning with I think we're starting off here this morning with our song. There we go. There's far too many of you that yeah, what's going on? You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me, so you can see. Judge us simply 'cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can't see what's going on. Good morning once again. You're listening to Recovery Radio on Enlightened Radio down in beautiful Bolivar, West Virginia. And it is beautiful out. If you get a chance, if you're in the area, stop down at the one of the cafes, the many cafes they have, and take a tour and just look around. Enjoy yourself. I'll guarantee you that your spirit will love you for it. Okay, our topic this morning is After Rehab, Then What? The song you were just listening to, which you all know, is Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? What's Going On, Berkeley, Jefferson County, and indeed, the entire country. We're facing, if you are alive, I'm sure you've heard of the opioid epidemic. We're hit with so many obstacles that people can and cannot get into long-term recovery. And when you get into recovery and you go through the rehab, my question to you is, after rehab, then what? Okay, so we're going to take I want to invite you to take a journey with me to something called the Recovery Cafe. Let's open your mind and your heart and your spirit, and let's see if we can erect a virtual Recovery Cafe. And I'm going to talk to you about what that is and how we can do that together to get it done. You know, I listen to a lot of the establishment, I guess you would say, the stakeholders. And I was talking to the mayor of Berkeley County, of Martinsburg, yesterday. And we had a little breakfast at Blue and White Cafe. You all know from Martinsburg, know where that is, up on Queen Street. And I was talking to the mayor, and we were talking about the rain and some of the flooding that went on in the city. And I was asking him about some of the events that are going on in terms of recovery and over the summer. And my friend George did not have a clue as to what was going on in his city. He's a great guy, And I think he's probably living out his years as mayor. And he probably thinks that, you know, things have always been a certain way and they're going to be that way as long as he's mayor. And, you know, so I'm not angry with him, you know. But anyway, so we get back to Recovery Cafe. Recovery Cafe is a refuge of healing and transformation. Now, first of all, I want you to take, you know, just clear your mind of everything that you can't do or that we don't have, and let's do something virtual. So Recovery Cafe, in order to get that model going in Jefferson and Berkeley County, there is a substantial fee. And they send out a team of people because the model for Recovery Cafe was created in Seattle, Washington. And now it's probably about 50 or 60 cities, this model. And the reason I'm talking about Recovery Cafe, because it kept coming up for me, after rehab, then what? You know, after you go to the meetings, then what? After you go to counseling, then what? After you get your Vivitrol shot or the other medical assistant treatment that seems to be working, it's really working, the medical assisted treatment for people, MAT. After that, then what? Where do you go to be a place of refuge for healing and transformation? And, you know, and people that need a refuge are people that have been ostracized and criticized and put down, and you know they've been made to feel like they don't have anywhere to go or with anyone of whom they can be that offers them some kind of healing. Recovery Cafe said, we are a community of men and women who have been traumatized by homelessness, addiction, and other mental health challenges, coming to know ourselves as loved with gifts to share. Last night I was in a meeting with families who have loved ones struggling with addiction. And, you know, it's just painful to really listen to some of the things that people are going through. And why is there so much recidivism? Why is it people continue to relapse? You know, because of what we believe addiction is and what we have no clue about what addiction is. But, you know, I was moved because these ladies were very open and transparent. Oh, and by the way, I think the youngest one was in her probably early 60s. Yeah. So just think about it. And the conversation came up about grandmothers raising grandchildren, and a lot of that is going on today because of addiction, substance abuse. And so we're going to try and put something together where we can go. This is people who are in recovery, families who are in recovery with those people, the children. So we need a place where people can go and not be criticized and ostracized and stigmatized. Recovery Cafe. At Recovery Cafe, you matter and you are loved. We believe that every human being is precious, worthy of love and belonging, and deserves opportunities to fulfill his or her potential, regardless of past trauma, mental and emotional anguish, addictive behaviors, or mistakes made. Addictive behaviors or mistakes made. And one of the good things about the Recovery Cafe is very educational. You get to be in not such a clinical environment, because we're talking about after rehab, then what? You have to go to someplace that you feel safe when you come out of rehab, because for me, the cycle of relapse and rehab and relapse and rehab had everything to do with the social disconnect that happens after rehab. Once I would get out of a rehab, after rehab, then what? And usually I went back to what I was used to, what I was comfortable with, and that was struggling with addiction. Okay, whether in crisis, newer to recovery, in long-term recovery, after a relapse, during a difficult life change, or mental health transition, the cafe is a place of support and stability for all individuals seeking to break the cycle of destruction. Doesn't that sound like a wonderful place? So virtually, let's put it together in our minds and think of those things that are not as though they are. Okay, the cafe, I think it's, what kind of space do you see the cafe being in? Because when you say cafe, you know, there's multiple things in there, you know, not just food. So we need to kind of construct that in our minds and start to build it. At Recovery Cafe, our community fosters stability, healing, and recovery. Without ongoing recovery support, the challenge of maintaining stability in mental health, relationships, housing, and employment, and breaking cycles of destruction may feel nearly impossible. At Recovery Cafe, our model transforms lives. Recovery Cafe was founded in 2003. Over the past 10 years, we have continued to improve and expand our programming and service to build a holistic, person-centered system of care. A holistic, person-centered system of care backed by evidence-based best practices that engages individuals for a lifetime of managing their disease and empowers them to build a life that realizes their full potential. So I'm coming to realize my full potential since I've been free from addiction to heroin and cocaine and for a hidden lifestyle. My life, the places that I've gone and the things that I've seen have, you know, has transformed my life. And so I'm thinking that if we have a Recovery Cafe model, the journey can begin for a lot of people in to get into long-term recovery. And so the Recovery Cafe, the menu that I'm looking at here is, it talks about membership requirements for providers, school for recovery. There's a school, and that's pretty cool, school for recovery. Let's look at an overview of that. And so that is part of the menu for Recovery Cafe. A school for recovery is within the cafe. The school for recovery gives cafe members and non-members the chance to grow, heal, discover, take risks, and surprise themselves by doing and becoming what they never thought possible. So when I was actively addicted, my station in life in my mind was that of someone sitting in a dark room with a needle in their arm and living by candlelight, living from day to day. You begin to ascend into darkness, homelessness. A lot of things happen when you get into active addiction. For me, there was no, I mean, my mindset was not on being sober or even being sober-minded. So I thought that, you know, my life would end in that very tragic way. I lost a lot of friends to heroin overdose over the years. And so I wouldn't participate in too many things except illegal activities. And recovery, so one of the on the menu items, it says, what is a recovery cafe? And it goes on down. So let's take a look at a recovery circle, because within the recovery cafe, these are some of the programs that we use. The recovery circles. I can't get that to pull up, but that's okay. Okay, so We promote a lot of group activity. Recovery circles are small, loving support groups where people are known, loved, and held to be their best selves. That's kind of the group that I was with last night. It was a small group, a loving and supportive group. And so it was our first meeting last night, but it was very informed. I'm looking forward to it coming up, and we're going to be once a week down at the Jefferson County Resource Center. We're going to be meeting at 6:30 on Monday nights. And so come on out if you have nothing to do or if you need something to do. And we're going to be introducing that Recovery Cafe model at most of the get-togethers that we're having. I hate to call them meetings because sometimes when you sit around in a circle of people, we tend to say that we're in a meeting. But we're calling it here at the Recovery Cafe, recovery circles. We have to change the language that we're using on ourselves and the language that we're using to communicate with one another, those of us who are in addiction or caregivers, or, you know, you have loved ones or children in addiction. You have to start to change the language. So we're going to, instead of saying meetings, we're going to say recovery circles. And this is what a recovery circle is. And each recovery circle is led by a trained circle facilitator. So these are we train you to become a recovery circle within the Recovery Cafe community. You're trained, usually led by recovery coaches and those in long-term recovery and family members with whatever your gift is in a recovery circle. You can become a facilitator, many of which are members with long-term stable recoveries, which are what I just said. Over 40 circles take place throughout the day, each Tuesday through Saturday at Recovery Cafe. Tuesday through Saturday, 40 circles take place. A recovery circle. Just wrap your, let that marinate a little bit. A recovery circle, not a meeting. Recovery circle. These groups promote healing and transformation, embracing communities of support, a community, a village, your parents, your uncles, your aunts, grandma, sisters, brothers, kids, embracing communities of support and discouraging the isolation that triggers substance abuse and aggravates mental health challenges. Wow. And that was a big one for me. Isolation, loneliness, oh, boredom. It, you know, when I was actively addicted and even trying to stay away from those people, places, and things, if boredom came into my life. And so while I'm sitting there being bored, here comes Joe Ripoff down the street, and he's acting some kind of way because he just finished getting high, but he got a pocket full of the stuff. And so boredom is saying, you know, how much fun it is for you to use what Joe Ripoff got in his pocket. And it would take me all of 20 minutes before I relapsed. Because boredom, it's a trigger. So these recovery circles address that. After rehab, then what? After rehab, then what? Remember, that is our topic. And it is very important that we consider after rehab, then what? Not just the people who are in rehab and getting ready to get out, but the family. After they get out, then what? I talked to the ladies last night and I said, after this meeting, then what? You got to go home to that same situation that you left. Okay. And the people who are there waiting on you to either talk to you about giving them some money, or they trying to figure out how they can get into your pocketbook or your wallet without you knowing it. It's called stealing. But we talked about that last night, and money was one of the big conversations we had. After rehab, then what? Here's what circles do. Circles create a sacred space where people can be their authentic selves, brokenness and all, and provide critical entry to a supportive community. So that sounds like a, you know, business as usual, because I've been to a lot of NA and AA meetings, and they sit in circles lots of times. You know, it's just a it's a physical circle. But the circle, the recovery circles, is an inside job, I want you to know. Okay, so here's what the recovery circle does. Serving each other with the giving and receiving of compassionate listening. Compassionate listening. So you need to let that marinate because when I was actively addicted, I felt like nobody would listen to me except the person that's trying to sell me something, some more drugs. But people who were not addicted, like family members and neighbors, they weren't really listening because, quite frankly, they had to pay more attention to their monies. They had to pay more attention to, instead of listening to me, they were wary of me because of my behavior. Okay, and so compassionate listening, respectful feedback with permission. Respectful feedback with permission. So in the recovery circle, when we exercise this particular piece, respectful feedback with permission. You know, usually in your familiar meetings, there is always some kind of disrespectful feedback going on, and there's always interruptions, cross-talking, and all of these things. But in the recovery circles for the Recovery Cafe, we go over that behavior when you become a participant. And so respectful feedback with permission is a must. And a commitment to honest sharing. Now, you know, that's an inside job. Because, you know, as people with substance use disorder, we practice being dishonest. And we get to be good at it. And the dishonesty starts to feel like honesty with us. You know, I used to think that because I didn't nod in public, everybody know what nodding is. Because I didn't nod in public, I thought nobody knew I was high. And once I got, I don't want to say clean because it implies that the other way is somehow dirty. But once I got free of my disorder, I realized that everybody knew I was high. And you know, and so I had to get to myself, and I had a good laugh about that, because when I was getting high, I thought I could dance, and people would laugh. I thought I was the life of the party, and I realized after I stopped getting high that I couldn't dance, and so I really fed into that narrative about that all black people, African American people, got rhythm. And so that's a lie, you know, because I remember I could never do the electric slide when I was not high. And one lady was telling me on the dance floor, because I tried, that's when I realized I couldn't dance. She said, brother, if you step on my foot one more time, I'm going to knock you out in here. And she looked like she could do it, too, because she was one of them heavy set thick sisters. And she had some nice shoes on, and I did step on her feet because I had no rhythm, you know. But I got other kinds of rhythm in my life today, so, you know, I'm gonna clean that up a little bit. Anyway, we serve each other with giving and receiving of compassionate listening and a commitment to honest sharing. Members learn to trust again and practice healthy interactions with others. And sometimes your trust gets violated. How are you going to react to that one? So we have to work on these things. It's the inside job, the Recovery Cafe. After rehab, then what? And we're beginning to heal the forest. We're beginning to change the soil in our environment so that we can grow to be healthy and strong and vibrant like the mighty oak tree. You know, it's because in my recovery, part of my life right now, sometimes I feel 10 feet tall, even though I'm only 5'9", because I've come this far, you know, and I'm still going, thanks to God, and it feels good. So I am a servant, and so Recovery Cafe has long been on my radar, but I'm going to need your help. So we're going to build a Recovery Cafe virtually this morning and some of the upcoming shows. I'm going to be talking about this because I want you to get it in your spirit and take a look at the model. You can go, you can Google this model. It's called Recovery Cafe. And you look at all the cities who have this place. Now, so when you think of the word cafe, most people think, okay, well, you know, you go and have a cup of coffee and maybe some bagels or something healthy. And that's in the Recovery Cafe. And so the Recovery Cafe, once it started, it's self-supporting. Ah, stakeholders, you need to listen to this. This is a good business move here. Serving each other with the giving and receiving. Educating about the recovery process. You know, the education part is, becomes less important to a lot of people when they're early in recovery. But I can tell you that the education about my past behavior and my present behavior and the hopefulness of my future behavior came through education. I had to take a real serious look at myself, and I realized that it's an inside job. All the exterior things like the Recovery Cafe are just places where you can come and allow the cobwebs to clear and the dust to settle, and so you can be able to see. Oh man, I hear music differently now, and it's beautiful. I was listening to the Dells this morning, and I was thinking about what a happy life I'm leading right now in recovery. And so the Recovery Cafe is a model that I really embrace, because after rehab, then what? And one of the triggers for me was boredom. And another one, you know, is right up front. It's economic starvation is what I call it. We're being starved to death economically. You're being starved to death socially. It's a disconnect that's going on. And so that's why we would benefit from the Recovery Cafe model, or at least give it a look. Because some of the things that we've been trying to keep people in long-term recovery over the years, I want to ask you a question. How's that working out for us? How do you think it's working out? Because I started down that dark road when I was 14 years old. And I didn't see any daylight until I was 45 years old. That's a long time to be actively addicted in my mind. You know, I didn't always use substance every day, but for 30 years, my mind was locked off from any light. There were so many disparaging moments in my life that but now I see it as a blessing, because I do have that journey behind me, and I'm walking in the light right now. So the Recovery Cafe, exchanging advice. Yeah, so you can go to enlightenradio.org and look and get the email address and the phone number for Recovery Radio. And let's exchange some of and promote some good, healthy advice. You know, I mean, I'll listen to bad advice, but I hopefully won't take it, you know. I've been given some advice was bad advice, and it didn't look like bad advice. So at the Recovery Cafe, in the recovery circles, though, you know, we can help you kind of identify some of the bad advice. You know, one of the things that we're going to be talking about in our Monday meetings down at the Jefferson County Ministries in Charlestown, we're going to open up by talking about some of the biggest lies that you as a person who is actively addicted, you as a person who is a caregiver and has a loved one who has a substance use disorder, what are some of the greatest lies that you've heard from those people, from us, about why you need money, why you have to have money? You know, I mean, and then when it gets really, really to a point where you're going to start committing these crimes, especially after you drain your loved one, oh, we can come up with some really good lies. So I'm kind of anxious to hear next Monday what because our assignment was for the ladies, and they laughed about it because their people have come to them, their daughters and sons and everybody, and talking about why they need money. I need money to get to work, and you don't have no job. You know, the funniest thing I heard from a homeless guy is that we was in a program, and he was homeless. That's what he said. But he was there for a while, and then he wanted to go get a pass to go home. He wanted to get a furlough from the program. It was a 90-day program. He wanted to get a weekend pass to go home. And you get what I'm saying? So he's homeless, but he's telling his social worker, I need a pass to go home. And the social worker was kind of puzzled about what home? Are you in here under false pretenses? If you got a home and you got admitted to the homeless program, it just don't make no sense. So those are some of the lies. I mean, and he actually thought that was going to, it sounded like a dumb criminal move to me. Like he forgot. She said, yeah, because in those programs, you have to go before a treatment team. And when you put in a request, the request goes before the treatment team, and the treatment team asks you questions. And one of the questions was, why do you want this furlough? And he said, to go home. And now, I don't know if he meant to go to Tennessee, where I was born, or something like that. I don't know, but it was kind of funny. Okay, and so we're back to the Recovery Cafe, the Recovery Circles. We're exchanging advice and promoting the development of skills to prevent relapse and avoid drugs and alcohol. You know, there's a song that I would love to put in the middle of this podcast because it brings to my mind, and it's Amy Winehouse. You remember her? Anybody remember her? I'm going to ask John to see if he can find that song, and we're going to play that because we're going to close out in just a little bit. But I want to, it's called They Tried to Send Me to Rehab. Amy Winehouse. And I want the people to listen to that because I'm curious about it. And I want to give you an assignment. Look her up and read about her. And my question is, why didn't she want to go to rehab? I know, there's a lot of reasons.
Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Look at
you, Dad. Yeah. I got an engineer here that's out of sight. I tell you, man, I'm learning so much. On Enlightened Radio from my friend John here. He's just
turn everything on.
Yeah, big shout out to Abigail Benjamin. She sponsored my table on last Saturday at the Hope Dealers event. And big shout out to all the donations that we got for Recovery Radio. And so we'll be able to put that to good use. Here she goes.
Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, just try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go. I'd rather be at home with Brad.
Yeah, you were just listening to They Tried to Make Me Go to Rehab. I'm curious about why this young lady, and so we can learn a lesson from that, because there are a lot of people who feel that way, affluent people, about why they shouldn't go to rehab. And tragically enough, she died from a drug overdose and not going to rehab or not getting into treatment, I'll put it like that. So I just got to come. You know, if you want to call in and give me your opinions about that, I really would appreciate it, because that is the way that we have to call a thing and talk about what is and kind of get people to see what can be and talk about things that should not be. So, yeah, I kind of like that song because it puts me in a place where I thank God that I went when I went, because of what can happen to people. And so sometimes being affluent and addicted to substance, you know, it's really kind of like increases your ability to stay stuck.
Oh,
where
yeah.
You are.
I mean, look at your famous, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you're making enough money to buy what you need,
mm-hmm. you can thumb your nose.
You can live as long as Jerry Garcia did, I suppose, yeah. You know. Yeah. And
how long did Jerry live?
Well, I think he was early 60s, maybe, when he passed away.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, he had all kinds of health problems arising from addiction, right?
Addiction, so. Yeah. And so this young lady here, right? So.
Yes. Amy Winehouse, she OD'd and she's gone.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
and she recorded this artist. Song, "No, No, No" to rehab too.
Yeah,
ooh.
Because of family, and so that kind of reminds me of like we were talking last night to the older people and what they were saying, that they were experiencing this same kind of thing, all sorts of resistance. But you know, from what I've heard about a lot of rehabilitation centers, I mean, you know, the ones I went to because they were in VA were, you know, basically pretty good. But I've heard some things about some of the rehab centers. So maybe Amy knew something like that even back then. Like people say, what difference does it make whether I go to rehab or not? I'm not asking you for anything. And so she continued to make her music. And, you know,
there's a lot of something about the music business and pretty destructive on a lot of folks, you know, in terms of, I mean, there's a long list of people who perished from dope, right? Really.
Yeah.
So,
And so actually, John, so when we talk and that's all we do is talk, people get frustrated. People who are advocates, people who are volunteers, people who are in the medical field, so much red tape that people have to go through, and so they just back off, you know. And so, and when you got enough meetings under your belt, it gets you full, and you kind of like, okay, I don't want to go to any more meetings but you know, meetings are important, but you know, you have to do something. It's like, after rehab, then what? After the meeting, then what? Right. Give me a bunch of paper and tell me to go and check this out and check that out and then come back. We need to move forward to do something. And so I'm kind of excited about the progress that I'm seeing with the Recovery Cafe model.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
So, recovery, how closely associated is recovery with... acquiring a mission. In other words, I mean, you have a mission that related to recovery, but I mean, it's also a part of your recovery, right?
Yes, the
now,
mission.
Now, I I don't suppose the mission has to be continued activity in the recovery. Could the mission be? And my other question is that was the absence of any mission part of the culture that arose that gave rise to this? I don't know. I mean, excellent. It's just a thought.
No, but your spirit is speaking to me in the right way. So I've received that. I feel that because yes, the absence of a mission, and then the mission, I guess inadvertently becomes your demise. Like, I don't want to go to rehab. No. That's a mission, yeah. You know, and so that's your position. And so you begin to behave and talk and think and do like you say your mission is. So that's very important. I think that for me, early on in life, I really didn't have a mission, or if I did, it was one that was maybe destructive for me because
I just want to have fun.
I want to have fun. I just want to be a part of the group. Because mine was like a group thing, you know, when I got addicted. But yeah, that's an excellent question. So, the mission, like we were talking this morning, the difference between terrorism and counterterrorism, you know, all of those are missions. It's mission oriented, and so we have to become people oriented, I guess. So that's my mission.
I mean, for example, suppose you're I've heard this happens. An educated Muslim from like the Shiite faction in Iraq, okay, or something like that, and you become convinced that sacrificing yourself is
a mission,
obviously a mission, right, of some kind, right? I mean, but. You were driven to that mission, by, something. How do you step off that one unless, you're looking backward? It's just, you can't look back.
You can't look back, right.
Something, like that. I have a hard time. And I see desperation drives people in one direction, right? Hope drives them in another.
In another direction.
And it's weird how they can...
Yeah.
Change your life, right? Go different directions.
So addiction is not about the haves and the have-nots. It has never been that way. The mission, I believe, it was to put it in the pockets and put it in the community of most of the have-nots.
I think you're right. I think that was there's some evidence, right, from the Nixon years that was a strategy. To because remember,
like it's a marketing strategy.
When
right?
In 1963, I was going to this. My parents took me to this church in Arlington. That was they were going to this Episcopal church, and they'd actually were going to a different Episcopal church than they were going to before because the one they were going to before had a minister that must have been the late 50s or something was picketing that movie. Song of the South.
Song of the South.
Yeah. Which was, how wonderful slavery was. kind of funny. Anyway, okay. But anyway, point was, he was picketing it, and his parishioners were, got a little, underpants got a little tight over that one.
Yeah, a little testy. Huh?
And so they left. So a whole crowd, including most of my parents' friends, they went down to this new church. Well, it turns out they hired an assistant minister who was tightly connected with Robert Moses and Lowenstein up in New York, and he sent all these young kids down to the South to participate in what was supposed to be daycare for civil rights workers, but turned out to be something quite different. But anyway, my point being really is that you reach some part of the road, right, where you find out about reality, like reality in Oxford, Mississippi. But not the same as in North Arlington, Virginia.
Right. Not at all.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. And you understand what terror means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you got some kind of little church meeting and someone tells you that the KKK is coming with a bunch of weapons, and they've been sending all these little notes around to people. Mm-hmm. I know where you live. kind of, you know, that kind of thing, right? Yeah. You know, and
that's a mission.
Anyway, you see that, and you come back home, and you're saying, "Oh my God, it's like can't live that way. I can't even look at it."
Mm-hmm. And you know, and a lot, it's just addiction. I think it seems to me that a lot of it's systematic, and because of you. Before we didn't know about the idea of privatizing. You know, I remember when it first started in the Army, we would come into the mess hall and you see civilians working behind the serving food and everything, right? And before, when I first went in, it was just military. You just had military. So they start privatizing things. And then, you know, the prisons.
Make a business out of it.
But when you are addicted to heroin for many, many, many years, and you that becomes your mission.
But you don't vote.
You don't vote. You don't participate.
And, you know, I think that was the other. I missed my point there because it's too early in the morning for me, that's James. Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I got my orange juice. No, it's not an interruption. Yeah. It's an inclusion. I'm an inclusion type of person.
But I think that was a plan there because the plan of the Democrats was that if you got rid of segregation, or at least one plan, some of the Democrats, if you got rid of segregation and in the South, that you would lose a bunch of these Dixocrats to the Republicans, but you would make it up the difference because you'd register, you know, 7-8 million people to vote, okay, African-American people. And, you know, Johnson predicted that that would not actually happen, that that would not work, even though he supported the plan, okay? Because this plan, the drug thing picked up right then, you know, right then, and pretty soon you've criminalized a quarter of the African American male population in particular, and they can't vote anymore.
Right.
In a bunch of these states.
And they can't own guns.
And they can't own guns. And, you know, the whole disenfranchisement, right? We were going to empower all you guys to vote. Mm-hmm. And now, no, I should have you to jail. And then, you know, see if it just goes away. And it's true, the Republicans took over the South.
They took it over, right?
They took it over completely, pretty much. I don't know, is there any, maybe a few places, but.
That's mission oriented.
So it was a drug policy that was pretty, I don't know, did somebody plan it that way? Who knows? But
who knows,
some of these guys, they see something happening and, oh, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we could, just use this and put a little money this way. And,
you know, I mean, and when you talk about it that way, the picture in my mind is Berkeley and Jefferson County where I live. Is any of that going on here? In our communities, and I don't know the answer to that, but it seems to fit.
If somebody directly refuses to invest in recovery in the legislature, for example, I'm all for these good programs, but no, I don't think we should spend any money. It doesn't do any good, unless you have
not
a visit.
At all.
If you have a visit from God or St. Paul, then you'll change, but otherwise, and there's no hope.
I mean,
come on. Now, those folks are, I mean, if someone came to them with a proposal, well, why don't we just keep it going? And none of them people will ever be able to vote either. That's a tempting thought.
Yeah, that's a very good conversation. You know, and a friend of ours, we did an interview with Dr. John. He made a comment. I saw it on the Facebook just now. It popped up about that song from Amy Winehouse being making a joke. It seems to be making a joke out of everything that's we're building here in the community, and you know, he's a big proponent of medically assisted treatment, and I agree with him on that front. And so I think Amy Winehouse, my point with playing her song was to say that when you're affluent and when your attitude is a certain way, then that's the kind of music that you write. Just like the hip-hop artists, they say, oh, I hate that music. Well, they're writing about what they're doing and what they're thinking about and what they're experiencing. And I think that's what Amy was trying to do. She's defiant, rebellious. And also, she likes getting high. you know, she liked using whatever it was that she was using.
Well, she's like the...
She was probably paying her parents, the ones who was trying to send her to rehab or family. She was probably making a living for
them. She probably bought their house.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't want that. People don't want that to go. I mean, it's sad to say, but you have to look at it from every angle. And so I think that that's what the model of the Recovery Cafe...
I heard a testimony once from David Crosby, one of those Crosby, Stills, and Nash guy, you know, who went to prison for cocaine possession at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, he went through this counseling program, and they did a study on him, and they said that, well, somehow it's your drug addiction is intimately connected to your love of music. We suggest that you give up the guitar.
And so after that, then what?
So if I give, Crosby says, well, what do I do then? I don't know how to do anything else.
And people, it's very easy to shine when you live on the top of the mountain.
You know,
and those at the bottom, those at the foot of the mountain are the ones who suffer the most. But their suffering is not in vain, because I believe now that my suffering was not in vain. There was a purpose and a plan, and there was a mission in the purpose that I'm actually sitting right here with you for now. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that go off into the la-la land and talking about these spiritual awakenings and things that happen, even though I believe in that. But, you know, I know that it's much bigger than that. And it makes much more sense to me that, like you said, if somebody refuses to give up, to support recovery, then, you know, we have to wonder why. We have to get a special counsel in here. I wonder if Robert Mueller is available.
I
know that there's some legal advocates in the community who are keeping a close watch. So, you know, I had a pretty interesting conversation yesterday with the mayor, which was not about any business at all.
Is this breakfast. Mr. Karras?
Mr. George Karras. Uh-huh. Yeah, so shout out to him. I think that sometimes when we get in a place where we have to not even hear the concerns of the people because our constituents want us to have a blind eye to turn. And so we have to keep one of those available. But we had a very cordial conversation yesterday. So we're going to talk about the Recovery Cafe some more in the upcoming shows. So I want you to tune in and give me your ideas and your feedback. And I really appreciate and acknowledge anybody that has any opinion about any of the stuff that we're talking about. I'm always one I stand in correction. If I say anything that offends anybody, please forgive me. But I got a show to do here, and I got a difference. I got a mission that I'm on, you know. And so if misdirection comes, then I'm familiar with that. So it won't come as any surprise. And so I'm going to end with that, but I want to see if John will pull this song up for me, because it was a bright day for me. And I thank you here on Recovery Radio. Tune in next week. Here we go. This one's for my baby.
Oh, what a night.
It's for you, Verdell.